This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I am George Potter, and I'm listening to Gospel Tangents.
It's the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology, and first daily Mormon history podcast. I'm Rick Bennett. I'm excited to have George Potter back on the show. You remember him a few years ago. We talked about Nephi's Harbor in the Middle East, Yemen, Oman area. And so George thinks he's found a good spot. But this time, I asked him how Nephi got to the New World. Did he cross the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean? So we'll talk about that in our next conversation. You won't want to miss it. Check it out. Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm excited to have a repeat visitor on our show. Could you go ahead and tell us who you are and where we are?
I'm George Potter, and you're here in my home in Elk Ridge, Utah.
All right. So George is our Middle East expert. Last time we talked about the Lehi's Trail through Saudi Arabia. A lot of people, maybe new listeners, maybe didn't hear you the first time. How did you get involved in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I worked there for 27 years as an executive leadership coach for the power company there. It's actually GE's largest company in the world, largest customer. So we had like 70 power plants, if you can imagine, and I worked with their consultants. I mean, with their executives.
Okay. Was it Aramco, if I remember right?
It's a Saudi Electricity Company. It's the company that powers the world. In other words, we send the power to Aramco, and they pump oil and make petroleum for everybody.
Okay. Well, very good. So I would just remind everybody, if you haven't seen our talk about Lehi's Trail, please go check that out. And I've been looking for a South America Book of Mormon expert for a very long time. And you believe the Book of Mormon took place in Peru, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, why do you think that?
Well, first of all, let's just go back to the original narrative about where the Book of Mormon took place.
Okay. Before you do, I want to ask you another quick question. Because there's a big debate on, well, I will say, Heartlanders versus Meso, and I know you're not in either of those camps. However, the question is, did Lehi travel around Africa and over to South America, as the case may be, or did he cross the Pacific Ocean and go around India and China and across? What's your take on that?
I gave a presentation at BYU once for the faculty.
Okay.
It was at the law school.
Really? They let you in there because they don't like any Heartlanders in there?
Well, Heartlanders are those people are sincere. Everybody's sincere, and that's a good part.
Right.
And I commend anybody who's really dedicating time and effort to try to defend the Book of Mormon. That's good. So when I gave that presentation, it was about Nephi's Harbor, where he built his ship.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Because you actually, there's a guy named Warren Ashton who's kind of, can I call him a rival? You guys have rival harbors?
I know Warren. Warren's a good guy. Okay. He's a good guy. And he's very, very sincere and has done a lot more work on trying to document Bountiful than I have.
We talked about that in our last interview with Cor Rory and Cor Kofoot on Nephi's Harbor. So I would just direct you guys to there for more on that. But
No, Nephi built a ship at Cor Rory. Let's get that straight.
Okay. Warren says Cor Kofoot, right?
Right. Now, I wrote an article in the Interpreter magazine, May of 2022, where I went through all the arguments for Cor Rory. Mm-hmm. And if you have any doubt about where he built the ship, I suggest you read that first. Sure. Okay. Do I know for 100%? No, but it makes a very strong argument for why he built the ship there. But when I gave this presentation at BYU, I showed a film. And in that film, I featured Frank Linehan, a friend of mine who I grew up with, who's an engineer in the Merchant Marines, went to the Academy, Maritime Academy in Stockholm, at Stockton, California, excuse me. He sailed for years. He's built his own ships. He's been able to commission ships, both privately for the U.S. military, a scholar on maritime history, and certainly knows his way around. He sailed through typhoons. He sailed through hurricanes. He sailed in sailing ships over 1,000,000 miles.
Okay.
He knows the ocean really well.
Okay.
So it came very obvious to me that I knew very little about sailing. And we're talking here about the main feature of chapter 16 and 17 of the first Nephi.
Mm-hmm.
The center object here is building that ship and sailing it to the new world.
Right.
So, you don't know much about a subject, go find out. And when I gave it, I showed a video of Frank Linehan talking about what it took to build that ship and to captain it to the new world. You could just see it in the whole room of all these scholars, supposedly. They're looking at each other thinking, we know nothing about shipbuilding.
Right.
We know nothing of what really challenges were that Nephi had to face.
Okay.
Just in capping a ship, let alone, you know, building it. So I knew very little about it myself. So a few years later, after I wrote Lehi in the Wilderness, Frank got back to me, Frank Linehan, said, I have a friend here, Comrade Dixon, he also is a officer in the maritime. He's also sailed 1,000,000 miles. He puts on all the regattas up in the Puget Sound. He has a simulator where you can put in the time of year, where you're going to start sailing from, and where you want to disembark, and it will set down and it will tell you exactly the course you should take. You can divide up into as many segments as you want, and it'll tell you the winds, the currents, the water temperatures, the probability of a doldrum, all this stuff. I mean, it just puts out reams and reams of information on a single voyage. I go, this sounds like a book. So what I did is I said, let's take a look at that simulator and simulate voyages. And even before that, they both told me, Nephi, a novice sailor, he seemed to be the one who was captaining the ship. A novice sailor could have never gone around the Horn of Africa. Impossible.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, nor could even.
I may have a dispute with you there, but keep going.
Okay, the Phoenicians got around. Okay,
the Phoenicians went around Africa.
Yes.
Okay.
Approximately the same time they got around. They're much better sailors than a novice Nephi. Okay. Nephi does not sail.
Okay.
They're saying those seas are so difficult,
mm-hmm.
both the capes, that Nephi could have never done it.
Okay.
So I mean, could an angel come down and took a hold of the ship and got him around it? Yeah. I mean, the Lord can do anything he wants, but that miracle wasn't recorded in the Book of Mormon.
Okay, keep going. I'm not going to interrupt yet.
Okay. So I take their word for it. And they've sailed around the Horn. They've actually been on captain these regattas and the race.
I have a video for you to watch, I can tell, but keep going.
Okay. Anyway. And the Chinese did it later.
Okay.
Okay. So they doubt that very much. And the simulator that we had them going around India, up through near New Zealand, catching the roaring 40s, get enough wind to get across to South America.
So you're going with the Pacific crossing?
The Pacific crossing. That's our best guess.
Okay. You ever heard of Philip Beale?
Yes.
What do you know about Philip Beale?
I've heard the name. I think he's one that was with the Phoenicia, right?
The Phoenicia ship, yes.
Yeah, the Phoenicia ship.
And he sailed around Africa.
Yes.
And made it all the way to Florida.
Right. Well, he didn't go to Florida on the same voyage. He went around Africa with the Phoenicia. Okay, then he went back to Mediterranean, or to England. Okay, sailed across, later on they sailed across to Florida.
Yeah. So basically, here's what happened, and this is what...
Nations were good sailors, and that ship was built with modern technology in the form of a Phoenician ship. I mean, I got it, but...
Okay, so for those of you who didn't watch my Philip Beale interview, I'll just recap really quickly. So he wanted to replicate the Phoenicians' voyage to circumnavigate. It took the Phoenicians 3 years to circumnavigate Africa. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
So Philip, in 2009, So if you've seen the Tom Hanks movie, Captain Phillips, which I highly recommend, and you remember the Captain Phillips got hijacked by the Somali. Yeah. So this is the same year. And so unlike Captain Phillips, Tom Hanks, he went way around Somalia. So that he wouldn't get hijacked by the pirates. Ended up in Cape Town. Huge wind blew him back 18 miles. Ripped the sail. He put up a new sail. Used a square sail just like the ancient Phoenicians. Now apparently the triangular sail is a better sail. But he built this ship as a replica of one that was a Phoenician ship that was found in France. At any rate, it took him 2 years and 2 months to sail. From, I guess he started in Syria, went down the Suez Canal, I believe, through down around Africa. When he crossed Cape Town, the winds just naturally blew him to Florida. Well, I shouldn't say to Florida, 300 miles from Florida. Okay. And he that wasn't his goal. His goal was to circumnavigate Africa. It was all he could do. And then he finally turned the ship around. And then circumnavigated Africa. It took him 2 years and 2 months to do that. Now, the second voyage...
If you know my book, the picture of the Phoenicia is on the cover of my book.
Oh, you're kidding.
They gave me permission to do it. Because we also talk about the Phoenicians in my book.
Okay.
Which I wrote with Frank Linehan and Comrade Dixon.
Okay.
Those.
So his second voyage was around, I think it took him about 9 months. He went through the Mediterranean, rocks of Gibraltar, basically followed Christopher Columbus's route, ended up in Florida, COVID hits. It only took him 9 months to do that, okay? COVID hits, they send him back, and then back to England, where he's from. And so now the Heartland Research Group has purchased the Phoenicia. They're building a museum in Iowa, and they're doing it. But Here was my big question, and I got to tell you, I was
on the defensive. Okay,
I was a skeptic. I was like, you know what? Because I've seen the journey of faith, the Pacific crossing, and I said, is that possible? And Philip's response was, sailors always say west is best because if you're sailing across the Pacific, you're fighting the winds. And you mentioned the Roaring Forties. He said those are much worse conditions than around Cape Town. Like, he had some rough times around Cape Town, but he said the Roaring 40s are much worse. And so he said it's twice the distance to go around India, China, etc. Now it's interesting that you said the Roaring 40s because you're taking a southern route. The journey of faith.
Winds are going to go in the opposite direction on the southern route.
So. Right. But the
He's going against the other way, he's going around Africa. We're going with the winds.
With the journey of faith, it looks like it kind of crosses the equator. And he said, no way. It's impossible. Now, I do know when they had the Fukushima earthquake and power plant meltdown thing. So there was earthquake. A lot of stuff from Japan went up through the Bering Strait, up Alaska, and then down, ended up in California. And that took a year probably for some of these boats and things, you know, obviously unpiloted, and, you know, just basketballs and whatever. So you either would have to go, so the journey of FACD across the equator, that's a no-go. You can try the northern route through Japan or the southern route. It was interesting that you picked the southern route for with the winds, but Philip says that's a much tougher journey, and he's one who's actually done it.
Okay, let me say this, okay? That simulator is based on tens of thousands of shipping.
But Philip's done it.
Okay.
And okay, it's twice the distance.
Oh, I want to do it.
So it took him 2 years.
Loan me $10 million and we'll do it. We'll build a replica ship we'll do it. Thank you. Yeah, if anybody has a checkbook, a deep checkbook, let us know. We want to do it. We want to build a replica ship. It'll go out of Oman, okay? So you've had, for example, Tim Severance. He built what he called the Sohar, which was a replica of Sinbad's ship, Sinbad the Sailor. Because the legends are Sinbad went all the way to China from Arabia. They went around India, they went through the East Indies and ended up in China.
So Philip, here's another trip
for you. This is Tim Severance, okay? Very famous marine archaeologist, okay? And so they made it. The fact is, you can't cross the equator. You die because it's like a big desert out there in the ocean.
Yeah, there's no wind. There's no current. I think there is a counter current, but it's like 1 mile an hour. So the wind will push you backwards.
Yeah, and you'll die before you get there. So you have to go to where there's enough wind to get you across. So the simulator we used simulated that voyage. Now, what we put in Chile. 30 degrees south Chile.
Because of Joseph Smith.
Yeah. And leaving from Port Rory.
Okay.
And that's what the simulator indicated that you do. That's the best route.
Did it indicate how long it would take?
Yes.
How long? 4 years?
No. It's not that long. You have to put in the type of boat, of course, that you're sailing in.
Well, and I know because Philip was making pit stops all along the way, and it took the Phoenicians 3 to get around Africa.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that Frank and Comrade pointed out, is that they had to have stopped on the islands to refurbish their water and fix their sails and whatever.
I mean, you don't really see that in the Book of Mormon, but it doesn't seem logical.
Why would they write that on gold plates? You know, all the little mechanical problems they were having as they went. They had to have anchors. They had to have all this sort of thing. So it would have taken them some time to have gotten there. But according to them, they had to get up there where there's enough wind to get you across before you starve to death. Because then they get to a point where there are no islands.
Right.
You just got to get there.
Well, and Philip said it's twice the distance.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
And so I would assume twice the time, right? That's
probably
4 years seems, I mean, it took them 2 years.
Yeah. Their main argument is, of course, simulator says do this. But their main argument is they don't think a novice sailor could have gotten around the Two Horns, okay, through the Straits of Magellan in South Africa. Well, we're having them landing in Chile, not in Argentina, and not in Florida.
Okay.
Now, the Heartlanders have them landing in Florida.
Whatever. Right.
Okay. But that's not what Joseph Smith taught.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with George Potter. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about the case for Chile, why George thinks that Nephi landed there.
But in Joseph Smith's time, that was now a nation called Chile. It was indicated, it is purported that he taught that they landed 30 degrees south in Chile. That was supported by many of the apostles, the people who knew him at the time. That's what they taught. They didn't teach the Heartland model. Right. They didn't teach the Mesoamerican model. That's what the early church leaders taught.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, subscribe on either Patreon or at gospeltangents.com. For just $5 a month, you can hear the entire audio uninterrupted. On our $10 tier, if you'd like to see the whole video, you can see that either on youtube.com/gospeltangents, or I've got a special Facebook group devoted for full videos. So subscribe at gospeltangents.com and sign up for just $10 a month. For $20 a month, if you'd like to get some bonus content, maybe some of the stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor, you can sign up for that. And then if you'd like to talk to me for $100 a month, we'll do a monthly phone call on something like Zoom, and you can ask me anything you want. So thanks again. Also, don't forget about the merch, mugs, t-shirts, hats, things like that. I'm trying to get the ties up there. Hopefully I can get up there. And thanks again for watching Gospel Tangents. And click here for some more videos.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.